Chapter 14. The Gang's All Here. Elizabeth leaves Stephen sleeping. Bogdan will be coming here after work for a game of chess. She hopes they will both be there when she returns. She will need to be with people. She walks out into the cold evening. It's nearly the end of summer, and the skies are getting dark earlier. Soon, it will be autumn. How many more autumns for Elizabeth? How many more years of putting on comfortable boots and walking through the leaves? She must enjoy it while she can. She sees Ron coming towards her with a serious face, and Ibrahim waiting by the door with a file under his arm. How handsome and well he looks. Ibrahim will be the last of them, she thinks, the last tree in the forest. How do I even begin? Thinks Elizabeth. They walk along the corridor with Ron carrying a couple of chairs. Then there's the sound of the front door opening once more, and Joyce is suddenly hurrying up behind them. They walk silently until they reach the door. Elizabeth knocks, as she always does, and then opens it. And there he is, the man who Karen Playfair recognised after all those years. The same book is open at the same page. He looks up and seems unsurprised to see the four of them.
Ah, he says. The gang's all here.
The gang's all here, John, agrees Elizabeth. Do you mind if we sit?
John nods and puts down his book as Ron sets down the chairs.
How shall we do this, John? Asks Elizabeth.
It's your decision, replies John. I've been waiting for that knock since the moment I did it. I do wish you'd taken a bit longer, though. What was it in the end?
Karen Playfair saw that photo of you, Ron, and the injured fox. She recognised you from when you were a vet, and you looked after her dog when she was six, says Ibrahim. She says she would never forget your kind eyes. Elizabeth is in her usual seat next to Penny's bed.
Who's in the grave, John?
With his eyes shut, John turns his face to the ceiling.
It was back in the early 70s, he starts. I went to a farm to look at a horse that was in a lot of pain. The owner didn't want to shoot her, which I understood, so I gave her an injection, and that ended things. We went inside and got chatting. He was a very lonely man. He had no family to help him on the farm, and no money. It was very wild and lonely up there, or that's how it seemed to me that day, and I wanted to leave. But then I realised that this man was very unhappy. If he had been an animal, he would have been screaming. And so I reached into my bag and I gave him an injection, the same one I'd given the horse.
You put an end to his suffering? Asks Joyce.
That's how I saw it.
So you had to bury him, this farmer? Asks Elizabeth.
Yes, but I didn't want to bury him on his farm because I knew it would be sold and someone might dig him up. And then I thought of the cemetery here. It wasn't on farmland, and no one was going to buy a convent. So I got my spade and drove up here one night to bury him. And that was it, until one day, 40 years later, I saw an advertisement for this place.
And here we are, says Elizabeth.
And here we are. I persuaded Penny it would be a lovely place to retire to, and I wasn't wrong. But I also wanted to keep an eye on things here and be close by if the worst happened.
Which it did, John, says Joyce.
I'm too weak now to dig the body back up, so while we were holding him, I quickly gave Ventham an injection, and seconds later, he was dead. I know what I did is terrible in every way, terrible. And from that moment, I've been waiting for you to come.
How were you suddenly able to inject Ventham with fentanyl, John? Asks Elizabeth.
John smiles.
I've had it a long time, since I was a vet. I've always known I might need it, if they ever wanted to move Penny.
You know, we have to tell the police, Elizabeth says.
I know.
But while it's just us, can you explain a few things? I think we both agree that Penny probably doesn't hear what happens in this room.
John nods.
But I think we also agree that maybe she does.
Maybe, agrees John.
And if she does, then why would you do that to her? Why put her through that?
Well,
You wouldn't, John. That's the truth, says Elizabeth.
Ibrahim sits forward.
John, you said that killing Ian Ventham was a terrible thing to do, and I believe you mean that. But now you're asking us to believe you did that just to save yourself? I'm sorry, but it doesn't sound true. There's only one reason for what you did.
Love, John, says Joyce. Always love.
John looks at the four of them with an unreadable face.
I sent Ibrahim to look at one of Penny's files this morning, says Elizabeth.
Ibrahim takes the file from under his arm and hands it to Elizabeth. She opens it on her knees.
Shall we get to the truth? She says. As you know, Penny kept files of all her unsolved murders. It wasn't allowed, of course, but that was Penny. She took copies of everything. Because maybe, many years later, she would see something or think of something, finished Joyce. Anyway, John, continues Elizabeth, after Karen Playfair recognised you, I started thinking, and I wanted to check one final thing in one of the files.
John's eyes are on Elizabeth as she begins to read.
There was a case in Rye in 1973 when Penny was a young police officer. It was about a girl called Annie Madeley. You remember Annie Madeley, Penny?
Elizabeth looks over to where her friend is lying.
Annie was stabbed during a burglary. She died in the arms of her boyfriend. The police found broken glass on the floor where the burglar got in, but nothing was stolen. The burglar was surprised by Annie. He picked up a kitchen knife, stabbed her, and ran. That's what's in the police file, anyway. But Ron wasn't happy when he read it.
It just sounded wrong, John, says Ron. A burglar in the middle of the day on a busy street? On a Sunday when people are at home?
Elizabeth looks over at Penny.
You knew it was wrong too, didn't you?
She picks up the sponge and wipes Penny's lips.
We started looking at it months ago, John. I was surprised that Penny had never shown it to us. I read the report on the knife wound, and it didn't seem right to me. In fact,
I think it was the first thing I ever asked you, Joyce.
It was, remembers Joyce.
I described the wound and asked her how long it would take for someone to die. And Joyce said around 45 minutes. This didn't fit with what the boyfriend had said. He had chased the burglar, then run back to hold Annie in his arms and ring the police. The knife hadn't cut an artery, so I asked Joyce if someone with a bit of medical training would be able to stop the blood and save Annie. And what did you say, Joyce?
I was certain about it, replies Joyce. You know that too, John, with your training.
The boyfriend, Peter Mercer, had been a soldier, continues Elizabeth. So he definitely had medical training. He'd had to leave the army for medical reasons. He knew what to do to save her, but he didn't. But that's not how the investigation went. I'd like to say that things were different back then, but I'm sure he would get away with it today too. They searched for the burglar, but with no luck. Poor Annie Madeley was buried, and the world kept turning. We were reading all about this case, but then things happened. Tony Curran and Ian Ventham, the body in the cemetery. We put the case to one side while we had a real murder in front of us.
But we know that's not the end of the story, don't we, John? Says Ron.
So I asked Ibrahim to find out what the medical reasons were for Peter Mercer leaving the army, continues Elizabeth. Can you answer that question, John?
John buries his head in his hands, pulls them down his face, and looks up.
Because he was shot in the leg?
It was just that, John.
Elizabeth pulls her chair nearer to Penny, takes her hand, and speaks to her quietly.
Nearly 50 years ago, Peter Mercer murdered his girlfriend and then disappeared. Everyone thought he'd got away with it, but it's really not that easy to get away with murder, Penny, is it? Sometimes punishment is just around the corner, just like it was for Peter Mercer one dark night when you went to visit him. Had you just seen too many of those cases, Penny? Were you tired of them? And tired of no one listening.
When did she tell you, John?
Asks Joyce.
When she was first ill?
John starts to cry and then nods slowly.
She didn't mean to tell me. You remember how she became, Elizabeth? She started saying strange things. And then the present seemed to disappear, and her mind went further and further back, and she started telling me stories from years ago. Some were not real, some were from when she was a child or when we first met, things we'd laughed about. I knew I was losing her, and I wanted to hold on to her for as long as I could, you understand?
We all do, John.
Says Ron.
So I kept her talking. But then...
John looks at his wife.
But then it was stories I didn't know. Secrets. Small things at first, like a bit of money she'd stolen as a child. But there was something right at the back of it all. A final lock on a final gate.
The worst secret of all?
John nods.
I came in one morning about 2 months ago, and she was sitting up. It's the last time I remember her doing that. And she saw me, and she knew me. She asked me what we were going to do, and I said,
Do about what? And she started to tell me. You know I couldn't let people find out what she'd done, Elizabeth. You know that. I had to try something.
They sit silently, listening to the sound of Penny's heart machine. It was all that was left of her, like a light going on and off far out to sea. Then Elizabeth says, gently,
Here's what I think we should do, John. I'm going to get the others to take you home while I stay with Penny for a while. It's late. Have a sleep in your own bed. If you have letters to write, then write them. I'll come with the police in the morning. I know you'll be there. We'll go outside now so that you can say goodbye.
The four friends step outside, and Elizabeth watches through the glass of Penny's door as John holds his wife in his arms. Then she looks away. When she opens the door again, John is putting on his coat.
Time to go, John.
The three friends go with John, leaving Elizabeth with Penny. She is holding her friend's hand.
So, did anyone get away with anything, darling? Elizabeth asks. Tony Curran didn't, did he? Everyone thinks that Johnny killed him, although I have an idea I must discuss with Joyce. And Ventham, well, you know John has to pay for that. I'll take the police there in the morning, and they'll find his body. We both know that. He knows how to make it peaceful, doesn't he?
She touches Penny's hair.
And what about you, you clever girl? Did you get away with it? I know why you did what you did. I see the choice that you made. I don't agree with it, but I see it.
Elizabeth puts Penny's hand back on the bed and stands.
I know what John did while he was holding you, Penny. I saw him inject you, so I know you're going. And this is goodbye. Darling, I haven't spoken about Stephen recently. He's not at all well, and I'm trying my best, but I'm losing him bit by bit. So I have my secrets too.
She kisses Penny's cheek.
I'll miss you so much. Sweet dreams, my friend.
Then Elizabeth leaves Willows and walks out into the darkness. The lights in Donna's apartment are low, and she's playing Stevie Wonder. Chris is happy and relaxed with his shoes off. Donna pours him a glass of wine and then another for her mother, who is sitting next to Chris on the sofa.
Seriously, you could be her sister, Patrice, says Chris. And that's not because Donna looks old.
Patrice laughs.
Madonna said you were funny.
Chris looks at Donna.
Your real name is Madonna?
If you ever call me that, I'll shoot you, says Donna, turning off the music and putting on the TV.
Jason Ritchie is on Celebrity Ice Dance, she says. Shall we watch it?
Sure, sure, says Chris, but he is thinking about other things. He turns to Patrice.
So, what do you do for work?
I'm a teacher, replies Patrice.
Are you? Says Chris.
Teacher, he thinks, who sings and loves dogs.
Patrice could be his perfect woman. Suddenly, Donna's phone pings. She looks down at it.
It's Elizabeth. She wants to know if we're free tomorrow morning.
She's solved the case, of course, jokes Chris.
Donna laughs and hopes everything is okay with her friend.